Morning, everybody.
Greetings.
You know, I can't really tell, like, there's a little, in this system, I see a little eyeball on the top left corner that says how many people are watching, and it's a lot lower than normal, because for these locals, this is the first day of school. Right. But this is for sure, like, our first broadcast after Labor Day, and things are normal now. Like, there's this forced normal amidst, like, you know, pandemic resurgence, and so
that's the end of the road for us. Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying, like, we're gonna have to subvert expectations.
Kathleen's here. Hey, Kathleen.
Oh, hey, Kathleen.
So,
see how I segued into the topic flawlessly?
Yes, I did. So what is the topic?
Subjects and systems of subjugation. I went with alliteration.
You did, yeah. The three S's.
Yeah, I could have added more. Subverting systems of subjugation, a series.
Or subverting systems of subjugation seamlessly.
And seriously.
And there we go.
And sassily. but before we dive into the three S's of subversion, I'm Ash.
With our fake British accent.
I was going for Nova Scotian. I'm assuming there's a Nova Scotian accent.
There is. It actually sounds a lot like a Minnesotan accent. Kind of that same sort of pseudo-Norwegian, Scandinavian thing.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Ash Van Stunwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. Yeah, and this topic came to us really from viewers from last week. So we're
from
talking
viewers
about
like you. Thank you. That was my PBS.
That was
voice.
Good. That was your PBS. That was very well done. And we were talking about patriarchy last week and destroying the patriarchy, and people are like, well, yeah, how do you do this? How do you subvert things? And so we thought we'd take that up this week. And so one of the things that I was saying before we got started is that, to me, subversion is one of these interesting topics, because I think that it is so threatening to us that we make it seem a lot more complicated, big, overwhelming, and impossible than it is. And that's a way of actually avoiding being subversive in our day-to-day lives in all the way that we can be. and so that's the thing that I've been thinking about. And We wanted to stick with kind of the church idea and theme, because we talked about that a bunch last week with patriarchy. So I want to give a real life example that actually brings these two things together. So a few years ago, I got to teach in South Korea as part of this Academy for Spiritual Formation that I've been on. The faculty of it's a Methodist program, the Upper Room, and so they do this in different places in the world, and they've been doing it in Korea for a number of years. And I was actually like the fifth string person that they asked. It was a whole series of people getting ill and different things happening, and but I got to go, which was awesome. And so as part of the academy, it's a five-day retreat. We do worship several times a day. And every day we do worship with communion in the evening or the late afternoon. And So Korea is a very patriarchal society. The Korean church is very patriarchal, but interestingly, the Korean Methodist Church does have women pastors, but they just tend to serve in very, very lesser roles, if they get calls at all. So one of the things I was noticing as the week was going on was that the only people leading the worship where they did communion was men. And it tended to be clearly some of the older men. And so I just sort of brought it up with one of the retreat leaders. I go, I'm like, so are any of the women gonna serve communion? And because I was one of the faculty people, and again in this sort of authoritarian and kind of hierarchical system, I that's I'm held in great esteem in that role. For me to bring this up was kind of a big deal because they sort of had to listen to me. And it turned out that one of the guys that was scheduled, because it was all scheduled out for the week, but one of the guys that was scheduled for some reason had to leave the retreat. And so they slotted in a woman pastor to do communion on the last, it was the last communion service. And this was an incredibly powerful experience. I mean, first of all, this woman was up there and she was literally shaking. I mean, it was like so different and unusual. I mean, here she is, presiding over communion with the bishop and all these big people, and then just seeing the other people and the other women, how they were reacting to a woman serving, and the comments and the conversations as part of it. And so this was a very subversive act. And the fellow person that I was there with got a little mad at me for bringing this up and kind of upsetting the apple cart a bit, but that was fine. People get mad at me all the time. And this does not change Korean society or the Korean Methodist Church or whatever, but it's a small act of subversion. And the truth is that we could be doing these kinds of things all the time. But it's scary and it's hard, and we don't like it when people get mad at us, and there maybe are sometimes consequences, like maybe you don't get invited back because you're this annoying subversive person, that does these things or whatever it may be. But I thought that was just a great story to me that brings together both last week and this week.
Well, and this is in it the issue of scale and the kind of the individual level versus systemic level, and there tends to be this sort of somewhat helpful mentality sometimes. Like it's good to recognize that your individual choices don't automatically change society. Like it's good to have some humility and honesty about that. On the flip side, there tends to be this mentality that, well, I want to go big or go home. And you filter that through kind of masculinity and Western civilizational thinking habits and capitalism and Americanism. Blah. People are like, if you can't fuck up the system, what's worth you doing anything? I'm going to be Abby, like, not, what's the dude? Not Abby Hoffman. Jerry Rubin, he's the quintessential like, fuck it, I'm gonna be rich. Like one of those activists. Like it's like if I can't beat him, join him. But I'm gonna be a good rich guy and change things from within. Like so, there's a sort of we don't. It's hard enough to figure out small scale. It's almost impossible to really understand the scope of large systems. Like the idea that somehow you can mastermind domino effect something that changes everything. Like you can't, that's not predictive, but you can subvert things in your local area. And that's where it gets difficult because that's when you see the repercussions of your action up front. And it's, there's good reasons, self-preservation and other reasons why we don't go messing with things all the time. Yeah. But really, this is the realm of control we have. And sometimes those do trickle into other areas of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to own the capacity and agency we do have and not get nihilistic because it only goes so far, and beyond that, it's a hazy fog of unpredictability.
All right, we got some comments coming in.
I'm trying to figure out what, Ellen, what you're getting at here. You can tell these folks are happy. You're talking about us?
She's talking about us.
I don't know. Emma? Yeah. I thought I was angry and ineffective.
That gets to our second comment.
Julia writes, totally pissing me off that a woman serving communion is a radical act anywhere. Angry and ineffective.
Yeah. Well, and I completely agree. It pissed me off and it was ridiculous. And that's actually why I brought it up, because I was just like, oh my God, this is just nuts. But I think that this also speaks to another thing about these systems and these problems. And, you know, it's something that we come back to, I think in different ways, time and again. We want to underestimate how bad things are. You know, we want to underestimate how bad the patriarchy is. We want to underestimate how bad racism is. We want to underestimate how bad these exploitative economic systems are. Because that also helps to get us off the hook for being subversive, right? Like, oh, you know, there's not too much racism anymore, right? Obama was president. Like, things aren't so bad.
White supremacy.
Yeah. And I think one of the issues of subversion is the issue of motivation, right? Like, how motivated do we have to be subversive? And I think we have to be pretty motivated. I think that it's pretty easy to let things slide for all sorts of reasons. And it's pretty easy, you know, and this gets talked about in the sphere of racism all the time, right? It's very easy for white people that have privilege to just go, well, I went to one rally last year. Like, why do I have to go to another one? You know, that's a lot of work, right? And I think that you have to be angry and ineffective, you know, pretty motivated to be subversive.
Yeah, it's an issue of maladaption. Like, so I don't want to go too deep into this because tomorrow I have class. I'm starting to do a class on spirituality and social systems. And then next year I'm doing one on sociopolitical discernment. And these are kind of getting these. There's lots you could say about this, but like part of the challenge is I just lost my train of thought. Because my head's filled with the sum totality of things I could say, and then I lost what I was going to say.
But all right, let's read some more comments.
And then it'll come back.
It
was going to change everything. CK writes, Victoria and I try to subvert and disrupt whenever possible.
Yeah. That's awesome. Right.
And I remember what I was going to say, but let's get some more comments. Kathleen Wright said, I've been subversive all my life. I regret that I was never able to convince others to join me. That's another big piece of this puzzle. Like, there's only subversion is best done with friends.
Yeah. Well, and subversion is often very lonely.
It is. Here we go. You with your extra accents and such, you appear happy today. I always have extra accents, but maybe it's extra accents.
Extra.
But this is an issue of maladaption and loneliness and stuff. Okay, so we live in systems, and in those systems we have institutions, and institutions have memory and communication. So, like, this might just be like, no duh, but like, I think we we tend to think common sense makes sense sometimes, but we miss out on the fact, like, look, if you're in a system, even if, like, let's talk about a family. Families have stories, they have their ways of talking, you're related, you have mannerisms, and it kind of gets baked into the system and it forms you. And so, mm-hmm. like, you don't even notice what's normal to you. And the only time, like, the person who disrupts and subverts the system is the maladapted person. And there's all kinds of ways we can talk about in the system. And often it's unintentional and you have to go to therapy because they think you're fucked up and all this stuff. Because really, what in our society, in our Western mentality, like, what's considered a disorder is just stuff that doesn't adapt you well for the society as it is.
Yeah.
So even like with autism, where more and more people recognize this isn't a disorder, this is just a way of being in the world that's different than other ways of being in the world, but it's still considered a disorder that has to be treated because the problem is you, not the system. So autism is a great example of, like, well, the more you can show up fully autistic in the world, maladapted for the systems as they are, it forces the system to change or the system to change you. Mm-hmm. And that takes a lot of pressure and it's hard. And this is why there's a loneliness to maladaption. But subversion always is, you know, whether small acts or big acts of subversion are always about kind of confronting the system with its inconsistencies or flaws. And people get crushed because systems would rather survive. They have almost a will of them, their own. They'd rather you die than they die.
Right.
And so it's really a question of, this is where if you look at Jesus and then think about church, like, this is where the cross metaphor comes in. It's not some sort of like, you should just be altruistic and die for others. That's not really the only thing that Jesus is saying there. It's like, look, you're going to screw stuff, you're going to fuck stuff up. The system's going to come down on you, yeah. Count the cost. But this is the only way for the kingdom of God to be a thing. We have to subvert these systems of death. And it starts here with me touching this leper or affirming this woman as the part of, as the heart of what the kingdom of God is going to be, like that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, so we've been talking about church systems or family systems. I mean, another great example of this, you know, is what's happening here in Minneapolis with the issue of policing, right? So, I mean, we had literally a year of uprising, subversion, protests, activism, activity. And what it's looking like is that at the end of the day, after all of that, we're going to get more money for standard policing. Like the regular budget for policing is going to increase. And, you know, there is this ballot initiative to try to really change the way that public safety is done here in the city. I hope it wins. It's going to be very interesting to see. I think it's actually going to get crushed. And the system, the powers that be, would just like there to be the same policing with more money. And so, you know, on a bigger level, on a social level, it's a great example of how challenging it is to really try to flip the scripts on some of these deeply embedded realities in our world.
Well, and this comes, you know, I'm just thinking about this issue of the uprisings, and I have leftist friends who scoffed and it's like, that's an uprising? You should tell that to Vladimir Lenin. I'm gonna sit here and like watch Karl Marx pornography and masturbate all day while you do your insurrections. Like, there's kind of this sort of all or nothing, so I'm not going to do anything on the one side. Yeah. On the other side, like, I really honestly believe that even most people, most white people that have Black Lives Matter signs, I suspect, and this is a judgment, they're still more upset about someone torching the third precinct than they are about George Floyd being killed. So, like, if you're not,
Yeah, I don't think that's a really like radical
assumption.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think that's a radical.
I mean,
guess.
I don't want to just, I can't peer into mine, so I'm going to be careful with that. But like, yeah. At least it's not a ridiculous idea.
No, it's not
ridiculous.
And the
thing is that, like, if we're talking like, well, we need to really change the system, man. I'm like, well, okay, maybe we should have more things like the burning of the third priest. What? I said subversion. Nah, let's not get carried away. And so there is this sort of tension. Like, so that is when the spectrum of societal revolutions, burning a militaristic police precinct, is a small act. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's personally, at an individual level, it's a very big act. Mm-hmm. And so it's good to think about that in perspective of like, okay, if I really want everything to be different, how much am I willing to let things be disrupted? And maybe when that precinct is burning, let me notice what's coming up in me and what it's subverting within me, mm-hmm. and not react and like question what script is kicking in that is so terrifying.
Yep.
About a third precinct being burnt down.
Yeah. And we could put that up against, and our dear friend Gus, it's apparently getting a little fame for a tweet that he made about this.
And this before, and it's a great point.
Yeah, really, and you know, we can put this up against the fact that many of those same people who say that destruction of property is the worst thing, right? So terrible to smash a window, burn down a third precinct. On the other hand, it's perfectly fine for the city to come along to an encampment of unhoused people and destroy all their property, to put all their tents, all their stuff in dumpsters, city garbage trucks, and just wipe out the nothing that they have, you know, the tiny little bit that they have, all personal property, all material goods, just destroy all that. And people are like, oh, that's fine, right? So these are all, we assume that we have a consistent sort of ethos or view of reality, but what we just have is a whole series of constructs. And so subversion, from a spiritual practice point of view, is about upending all of these constructs. Yeah, and as you say, like, what starts to happen within me, and CK's comment is a great one along this.
Is this why the queerness of Jesus is such a hard message for the church to understand?
Yeah.
Well, that's, yeah. Again, this is like, just to be, to go off of that a little bit, like, this isn't, so if you say we should include trans people in churches, that's offensive enough to most Christians, but it's still like, it doesn't fundamentally threaten the narrative. Necessarily. It does if you feel like the primary role of the church is to destroy sin. Okay, but if you have a broader, more hospitable view, then it's like, well, those people look weird and they make me uncomfortable. But we can have them in there. Don't get them too close to the middle. They can have a table at convention. Like that kind of a thing. Now, if you're a good maladapted person, you just be like, okay, then I'm going to come to church in drag. Or whatever, like, which is a threatening thing. Like, this is where it gets threatening. It's personally threatening, and trans women in particular are under threat. But disrupts, and that, but that offends the narrative even more. The more you put it to the center, so if you start talking about queer Jesus in a way that is not just kind of a one-off, but a primary lens, and you start acting in that, and you start queering sacraments, that's bringing this sort of maladaption to the center. And that's when it gets really offensive. Yeah. More so if we're not talking about like systematic theologians who then get read in seminary, because that's still not the center. I'm talking about like what happens at the table. And so that is very offensive.
Yeah. Yeah. And one great example of this, again, connecting with the patriarchy, one of the guys who's a super big modern hymn writer, blanking on his name because I can't remember names. I think Wren, is that his last name? Anyway, very well-known modern hymn writer. And you know, when there was all this movement to let's use some different pronouns for God other than he came out and said, when I hear God called she, I feel like I've been castrated.
Good. No, but that shows like that's,
you know, which is a pretty amazing statement, right? Like that's, you know, that's how much this person has identified with patriarchy, right? And with this image of God, and it's so central. Like I literally, the only way for me to keep my testicles is if God is called he.
It reminds me of like, you know, in the, I guess it was the 80s or 90s when you had women gather together and talk about wisdom as a divine feminine, which is totally
the Sophia Convention here in Minneapolis. Yeah.
Yeah. And this was a long
time. People are still having meltdowns.
Still upset. And let's be honest, that should not have been seen as a provocative act, really.
No, not at all.
Because it's not like they're saying we are replacing the body and blood of Jesus on the table for all times with milk and honey and praise be the blessed goddess. They didn't even go that far. That'd be fine too. Like, but I'm just saying, like, they took a step of recognizing something that is pretty biblical and create a ritual around it and reflected about it.
Yeah.
Something that is not that disruptive, but that just freaked the hell out of the patriarchy. People still talk about it. Yeah. And to me, there's like that was just like a direction that a lot of people could have gone in so many amazing subversive ways and have. Mm-hmm. But that, I remember like at the time I heard about it in rural Minnesota, because it was like, oh my God, I bet you they're pouring goat blood on each other and dancing naked around the fires of Satan. Like that's kind of how it's perceived.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, when I came to Crookston, to rural Minnesota, you know, 21 years ago, I mean, people were still up in arms about that. And it had happened like 15 years before I got there. So, all right. CK's got another comment. Then Alan's got a long comment. Thank you for splitting that up so it didn't disappear.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Imminent domain of the Rondo neighborhood is destruction of property. That's another example. So that's a historic black neighborhood in St. Paul that they decided, well, we have to build an interstate somewhere. Let's put it through there. And I mean, that story is retold throughout the country. But if you burn a precinct. And so this is the thing. It's like, which of these pieces of property is more central to the determinative narratives and systems that uphold our society as it is? A homeless person's tent is not central to the story that binds our society together and its dysfunction and subjugations. A black neighborhood is not that central, but a police precinct is. And so when you get upset, even if you're like, Black Lives Matter, and you're homeless people matter, but you're more upset about a precinct, then it says, okay, this is how formed I am by these systems, and I should maybe think about becoming more maladapted. Ellen writes, it's a four-parter.
Yeah, four-parter.
Ellen's doing the great case example of this is how you write long comments in the system, because otherwise they get cut off. So thank you, Ellen. Once I was a volunteer liaison for an institution hosting a men's prayer breakfast. I was the only assumption, a woman there, one of two white folks. I was asked to speak near the end of the program. Before I spoke, a preacher got up and gave a spiel about being a hashtag manly man for Jesus, even going so far as to use an extreme homophobic slur. When my turn came to speak, I read the verse from Galatians about there is neither slave nor free, male nor female, and quoted MLK's Beyond Vietnam speech, saying that the artifice of injustice needs to be torn down. I have no idea how what I said was received. I was shaken from fear of having spoken up.
Yeah, I mean, that's an awesome story and good for you. And and that, you know, that shaking and that fear is an embodied experience and recognition, right? And this is where you know, these systems are baked into our nervous system, and we are deeply interconnected. Our mind is deeply interconnected, and so our bodies know, like, this is a threat, right? You know, danger. And so we have these embodied experiences where you can feel when you are being subversive, right? You don't have to think about it. You don't have to, you know, sort of puzzle it out. Like, your body starts telling you, like, okay, you know, you're doing the subversive thing. Mm-hmm. And so that shaking and that fear, you know, boy, I'm reading the room and everything around me is telling me this is not what the system wants to hear. Right? And so part of, you know, part of the subversive act, and earlier on, Ash, when you said, you know, do it with friends, right? I mean, this is why communities of subversion are so needed, because, yeah, we need support for being out there in systems where, you know, we are threatening the status quo. But that's a great story.
Yeah, and I know we're past 30 minutes. Yeah. We usually go a little bit over. There's not a lot of comments coming in because people are in awe. but I want to just pivot
the
just a little
people
bit
who are not here are in awe. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I want to just pivot a little bit as a way of maybe kind of setting up Friday, because the role of the church. This is, it's been years now since we did, you know, and I was a presumptively cishet person at the time, when we did that worship. We basically had a big banner in front of this queer, not friendly church that was trying to be hip. And the sign said, silence is sin, your queerness is made in the image of God. And we had people dressed in drag, and then we had some straight cishet dudes like running interference to talk to people as they came on. We originally had gone into this foyer to try to forcibly offer communion and foot washing, and we were kicked to the street and we welcomed people as they came out. And this was very disruptive. Like, and people were angry about it, not just there, but like who heard about it, because that is not in the spirit of unity, right? this idea. And around that time, I wrote this article about how we need to start disrupting church services, because the church in America provides the foot soldiers for the American empire. And there's this long tradition, people like Benjamin Lay, early Anabaptists, going into church services and disrupting. And this is one of the things that we need to think about when we're talking about subversion. Like, if we're not willing to disrupt religious services or the way things are done normally out of some sort of commitment to unity, because we assume unity means something that we don't even, probably can't even articulate. And we don't feel like there's something wrong or perverse even about going off and doing your own thing with other people. No, you have to stay Lutheran. You have to stay Catholic. If we're so baked into the system, and then the only way we can think about changing it, if it's our vocation to do ministry, is to somehow be dependent on pensions and a system in order to make a good living. And so that we have to pick our battles. This is the end of history as we teeter towards collapse, when the only institution that I know of that Jesus like pointed towards to say this is the place where disruption will happen is from the kingdom of God, the people, the church. I mean, this raises all sorts of questions. Like, if the church is theoretically supposed to be the school for subversion in the world, and it's not, and here we are listening to these two people on this transmission broadcast talk about subversion and Jesus stuff, and we're not even willing to really subvert our churches, then how much do we want to subvert anything? I mean, that's to me the big question. Like, and if, what do we do with that? Because clearly the church is not subverting much at all. Last comment, David writes, thanks for the discussion. I only caught part. Do you record it? Yes, this is a good reminder that you can always find this after the fact, and you can kind of jump in. Like, I'm assuming people can start watching this feed right now from the beginning. It's always available afterwards on the transmission Facebook page, the Minnesota Institute of Content Contemplation and Healing page, the Center for Prophetic Imagination page. It's also on YouTube. And if you go to, let's see, we have the Center for Prophetic Imagination has a page where we kind of have archives.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So lots of places.
Lots of places.
Great. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Good to hear from you, and hope you have a great day. We'll be back on Friday.
Just fascism Friday. Fascism Friday. Every Friday is fascism Friday. See ya.
Bye.